Hello and welcome to the Chilly Vision podcast. And today I am in the old railway town of Eastleigh with a man who owns many, many Commodores. It's Commodore Lad. Hi.
Mr. Chilly Vision, what an absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for coming.
So, how did you first get into having so many Commodores?
It's a strange story. The basis of my career or the basis of my training was I started back in sort of 1984 when I was 14, 1986, apologies. And I trained on all of the 8-bit series and 8-bit micros because it's a fantastic time to be alive, and exactly the right time to get into IT because everything was changing at that time, as you know. So fast forward, having trained on 64s and, dare I say it, the odd Spectrum and BBC and probably definitely the odd Amstrad in there somewhere. Fast forward to 2000, the early 2000s, and I was getting bored because you don't get to fix anything. There was nothing. It was just board swapping. There was no engaged brain. It was like, is that bit? So you just replace it. And looking on eBay at the time, I still have my own original 64. Looking on eBay at the time, you could buy them for virtually nothing. So I decided to start repairing them, buying them up, some of the sad, really sad broken ones, buying them up and seeing if we could do something with them.
How did you acquire your first Commodore 64 back in the day?
My first 64 I got from my birthday. I do remember pestering my parents for it. My friend, actually, a good friend of mine, Mike, had one. And again, dare I say, I started off with a Speccy. I went round to his house. I was just going round to his house to play on the 64 because the games were so much better. But the thing that actually, the one thing that did it for me that just completely turned my head away from the Speccy was Forbidden Forest. That just absolutely, A, scared the crap out of me and B, blew me away at the time. It was such a good game, the music and the you know, scary graphics and stuff. And that was it. I wanted a 64.
And those first games, I mean, it's hard to put across to people today the first time you saw a game like that.
Yeah.
In terms of
absolutely.
How game changing is all the games today. There's no leap forwards. Perhaps it will be with AI, but, you know, there's no leap forward like that wow first moment.
I think now the games today, they are so graphically superb. It's like, how far do you push it? So there's no, if you think about it back in the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, you had Pong. Most people had a black and white binatone thing, which is to go ping. And all of a sudden, I have this piece of equipment in your house, which wasn't too expensive, which had colour and graphics and amazing sound. It was just incredible. I don't think you're ever going to see that leap again, you know? So that's what did it for me. You then go to, you take Forbidden Forest, fast forward maybe 12, 18 months, Thing in the Spring turns up. I remember going to John Menzies in Bournemouth and hearing about, before, you know, having heard about Thing in the Spring and just standing there, slack-jawed, listening to the music and looking at the screen going, how the hell have they done that? Like I do with most of some of the demos that come out today, some of the stuff you see released at demo parties and things, absolutely incredible. I mean, how do they make it do it? It's a 40-year-old machine and they are still inventing new things. Absolutely incredible.
And you mentioned John Menzies in Bournemouth, a place I knew well.
Yes.
Down the stairs into a world of wonder. Superdrug.
Yes, yeah, indeed. I remember going downstairs. Yeah. What just amazing place. Used to go. There was also Lansdowne Computers. Do you remember that? Do you remember Lansdowne Computers? They were sort of up. They weren't on the main drag, as it were. They were a bit more specialist. So you'd have to wander up there, but they did BBCs and stuff. So they were a bit more specialist. But that was another great place to go. But yeah, John Menzies. And even the local Boots, you could go to the local Boots, couldn't you? In that area, and you'd be able to pick up computer games and stuff.
I go into that Superdrug and I stand where the stairs were and just think, is it all still down there? Is that EDOS machine that they, in the 90s, they could duplicate your own games down there? Is it all still down there?
Have they just concreted over it and just left it? If you smash one of the, dodgy looking doors in, like, you know, from the back, is it going to be like a time capsule? I think that's what I was looking for.
The only place I've ever seen a Sam Coupe in the flesh where they were trying to sell them off cheap.
Oh, then don't you wish you'd have bought 10?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't have enough money, unfortunately. But yeah, kind of that, then those piled up, I remember, trying to sell those off. This kind of Commodore 64 ownership, that must have been the majority of the 80s?
Yes, yeah, majority of the 80s, yeah. I then migrated to an A500, I had an A500 Plus, And I had, for the A500, I had quite a bit of additional stuff for that. So I had the hard drive and the external floppy and the expansions and stuff. But I did a lot of programming for the 64. I wrote some rubbishy demos and stuff, but at least I could make it scroll and make it sing and make it do stuff. I could never really get my head around how the guys did it on the Amiga. And the whole assembler thing, having hard coded everything myself using a disk mate monitor, so you loaded all your graphics and you loaded all your music in, you coded everything, copious notes of what Bridgestone you'd use for what. And then I guess in the Amiga I tried to do that with some help from a really helpful guy who I happened to meet whilst working for this company repairing his Amiga. And I must have been a right pain in the bum, but I never actually got my head around it. I could never understand that the Amiga would just allocate memory to you as opposed to you having a fixed memory structure. Never really got much further than that.
It's a big old jump from 6502 and a C64 to that kind of setup.
Absolutely. Some people did it effortlessly. Some of the programmer guys, I think Andrew Braybrook, some of the 8-bit guys just did it, and they just did it. My brain never worked like that. I don't have that sort of programming type brain. I just blow stuff up.
It still took them a few years to get hold of some of that. I mean, really get hold of the Amiga hardware, because a lot of those early Amiga games were effectively ST ports. Yeah. And they're not really I mean, Braybrook and, you know, the Houston stuff and all the rest of it, they're using it a bit more, but really it's that kind of the 90s before it really starts to become, you know, Tarakan 2, that kind of stuff, where the Amiga really becomes to be more than the fancy enhanced 8-bit, if you see what I mean.
It didn't, I guess it's because I don't know whether it was because the 64 grabbed me when I was younger. I don't know if that was what it was. But the Amiga really didn't hold anything for me. It didn't grab me by the balls like the 64 did. And I think a lot of the 8-bit guys will tell you that the 64 actually it's a lot of the specky guys as well, it gets into your soul. It's really strange, but it's just a machine you can't leave alone. It's, even now, however many years later, I just can't put the thing down. I pay stupid money sometimes for a broken one. I try not to do it off eBay, but sometimes I've just gone, I have to rescue that, look at the state of it, I need to help it, you know, because you just do. It's a very, very strange thing to explain to people, especially the wife.
You're very much closer to the hardware, though.
Yes.
And it's not all, you look at a PC or something like that, it's all different modules and things. You look like a Mac, it's just a board, yes, with stuff on it, whereas a C64, you open up, look, there's discrete chips here. Mm. I can make sense of this, even if I don't know exactly how that chip works, in my case. I go, that's the VIC, there's the 6502, there's the RAM all down there. Mm. And it's much more kind of like people who work on classic cars.
Yeah.
Whereas I go and look inside my car, and I've had the intake manifold done the other day. That's a module. Mm. That's just, it's absolutely like a computer. It's like they whip this whole bit out, charge me $1,000 and put a new one in, and it's...
That is exactly my point. That's exactly what I was saying, because, you know, older cars you could replace bits on, engine mechanics love them. Older computers you can replace bits on, you can desolder stuff and put a new bit in and make it work again with a car or whatever. Anything it's all modular. Everything's designed, has a finite life to a certain extent, and I'm just trying to do my bit to try and keep these alive for as long as we can. I wish I could buy all of them, but I don't really have that much money or that much storage space, to be honest.
Yes. Well, we're going to have a look at your collection in a moment.
Sure.
So your collection today, you've got a large number of C64s. Are there any other computers you've kind of gone after?
Nothing specific. I've tried to grab every possible combination or every type of C64. So there's a couple of silver labels which people seem to go nuts about. I do like the really early boards. I have a thing about the really early boards. And there's a specific type of C64, the early C64C that came out, which has the old type Commodore 64 graphics on it, but it has the cream colouring. I have no idea why. I've just got a bit of a thing for them, so I've gone for those. But otherwise, no, not really. There's a few Amigas up there. I've got no idea. They mostly come with bundles. I do have a Sinclair box up there. I've got a QL and some other bits and pieces. Anything really, to be honest, anything that I think I can have a go at repairing. But it has got so silly now, where just to buy anything broken, everybody seems to think because it's broken and it's old, it's worth a fortune. So you have to be on the lookout for stuff. 128s, actually. But again, that's Commodore, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I like those as well, but they're a real pig. But they're brain testers. Again, it tests your brain to fix those. But no, nothing specific, really, just Commodore.
Okay, let's wander upstairs and see the collection.
Come and have a look. You might recognise what's at the top here.
Go up the stairs. Ooh. Trying to hold on.
Don't look at that.
Oh, it's a GT65 monitor.
You've only seen these pictures online, obviously. It really does exist. It's not a mock-up.
Goodness me. I have never seen so... Oh, hang on. I've got to describe the scene. I've walked into a room with racks on two walls containing hundreds of Commodore 64. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 24, 40. There's probably 500 Commodore 64s in here. So we've got about 500 Commodore 64s in here. There's a C128 down the ground. So talk me through the ordering in here.
So I've tried to put all the bread bins together. As you can see, there's some bread bins there, and there's some more over here. There's a whole swathe of...
Oh, there's more.
There's more. Oh, there's definitely more. Yeah, there's more.
I hadn't seen the two other walls covered with Commodore 64s.
So we've got some 128s. We've got some of the some monitors I've managed to pick up, and more boxed 64s, along with all the boxed 64s and printers and stuff you've got here. 1541s, 1570s, some of the... Haven't got too many of those, actually. There's an original VIC 1540.
Oh, floppy. We've got many, many floppy drives. Yeah.
Many, and there's more sort of behind there as well. What else have we got? Yeah, so the 64s are there. We have the sort of TED series of Commodores here, which is a very small shelf, mainly because they don't last very long. And this is probably the jewel in the
crown. Oh,
you don't see many of these. It's Commodore 116, which at the time was supposed to be a Spectrum beta. It has a very Spectrum-like.
It has a membrane keyboard.
Yeah.
That looks lovely. It's like a miniature Plus 4. With rubber keys that are a little bit too small to be
any use.
But it's cute because it looks like a Plus 4, and you've got some Plus 4s down there.
I've got a couple of Plus 4s down here, yeah, and some C16s as well.
Yeah, I'm disappointed there's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 8 C16s there.
Yes.
9.
Possibly not, and I think I've got a couple in the man cave as well, actually, to be fair. There's an old pet up there, as you can see as well.
Very collectible now.
4032 in there. That's one of my three 1200s, and there's 500s, and yeah, I've just tried to keep it all together so that I can see what I've got. There is some space. I need to fill some space. I'm gonna have to buy some more.
And these C64s, we've got C64Cs over here.
Yep.
Are they sorted out in any particular order?
The C64Cs I've got, as I said, the particularly collectible ones that I like with that type of keyboard, I've got those all in the same place. They all work. They've all been sort of stripped and inspected by me and repaired where necessarily. I hope some of them are broken again because I need some more to fix.
There's a blue one.
Yeah, there's a blue one there. Yeah, that doesn't have a keyboard. That was... Strange one, that. I'm not sure where that came from.
Is that one of those aftermarket cases?
It is an aftermarket case, yeah. That came with a whole load that I bought. I must have bought 40 off a chap, and that came with it. And there's some VIC-20s there as well. So we've got the VICs in the bottom right-hand corner. I forgot to talk about them. And there's a black one here as well.
Oh, that's lovely. That's got lots of four knobs on the top.
I think this is the one that had the Messiah cartridge in it. I've got that Messiah cartridge, but it's got really, as you can see, it's really useful. There's no writing.
Yeah. Oh, they're not LED backlit or anything. They're just black.
Do you know what? They might, but I haven't plugged it in. Maybe I should try plugging it in. What do you think? I'll give it a go.
Give it a go. Plug it in. See what it does.
There's some weird stuff going on in there. I haven't opened this one up.
Oh, hang on. Yeah, there's a wire on the...
I think it had something. I think it had the reset. He must have had a reset or something on there. But yeah, don't do that at home, kids.
They've got some original boxes up here. I mean, it's nice to see them stacked up rather than kind of people put them on display. And I always think, I want to see the machine more than the box.
I always have, you know, when people put them on, I say it's very, I get upset when people put them on display, but you see when people put them on the walls and stuff like that, that's great if you've got a few of them, but they should be used. I wish I had time to use all of these, but yeah, I like them like that. These, you try not, also, if you stack them in the other way, the boxes tend to sag.
Yeah.
So the boxes tend to bend, which doesn't help. Do you want to see the...
There's more.
There is more. Oh, there is more.
There's more. We're walking through to another room.
Come through here.
Oh, we We've got another room of... Oh, monitors.
So there's monitors. There's more
Amstrad
monitors.
CM14. Yes. Wow.
I thought you'd enjoy that. I thought you'd enjoy that one. there's a kind of box of death here. Oh, I need to take that. I'll take that home as well. So there's a box of death with just various bits and pieces, old stuff, which I probably need to go through and repair. Dreamcast controllers. There's just various...
Atari ST.
Yes, 1040 ST. There's more. There's some stuff that you may like. I'm sure there's Amstrad.
Hang on. One, two... I've got five CPCs. Not 664 in there, is there? 6128, lovely.
Yes. I don't know if this is a 664. No, I don't think there is. There's a four, I think they're all 464s. So I don't think it's a 664.
Lots of spare Commodore keyboards.
Yes, I got those because I had a lot of broken cases or empty cases without keyboards. And those have just been also a mass as well. I think I've got a load of spare ones. Those boxes are all full of C2Ns, which are the tape.
Everyone's got a million. they breed. I swear they breed.
I think they do. If you leave them together, if you leave them alone for long enough, they do breed. So if just over here, there's more Ataris. There's an old PET.
Old PET dual floppy disk. That's huge. That is absolutely huge.
Massive, isn't it? That does really need... I've got to fix that. I've got some 1571s, which again need to be sorted out as well. It just... The more I go through, the more you sort of dig out. You go, oh, I forgot I had that. Oh, I forgot I had that. This is a little box CPC there. Still got a wrap.
464 with a box on it. To be honest, I've had some boxes like that, and the box has, I'm afraid, people get across, gone in the bin at that stage.
When it's got to that point, you just got to get rid of it.
Couple of plus twos.
Yeah, don't tell anyone about that. I've got a Sinclair box of shame.
They're both black ones, I think. Yeah, they are the.
Is that both black? Or is it just really dirty?
No, they are both the Amstrad Plus 2As.
I have got the grey ones as well. I'm sure the grey ones are around somewhere. Oh, look, more disk drives.
More disk drive. More disk goodness
drives.
Me.
Goodness me. Again, they tend to multiply when you leave them as well. These are quite rare. These 15, the Plus 4 1551s.
Hang on, trying to squeeze around just for the listener. I'm just squeezing through towards a Philips monitor and an Atari monitor.
Yeah, so the Commodore 1551, which is famously noted for if you breathe on it, it'll actually the case just falls apart, as you can see here from this one, which is just somebody sent to me, and they tried to wrap it really well, and just as you can see,
oh dear, that's it's fragile. That's Atari ST quality plastics.
Is it that quality? So yeah, there's a number of stuff here.
I've got a DAT machine down there.
Yes, I've got DAT machines. I've got a... I seem to have a ever-growing collection of oscilloscopes as well, which is a bit strange.
And DAT machines, they're something that do fall.
Yes.
Apart.
I do. I've had... DAT's definitely something I really... I like DAT. That's a fantastic medium. I've got a little portable DAT player as well, which is really good. That's really useful. But like I said, I keep finding more stuff. I really need to sort through it. But yeah, it's good.
You've got a big online presence.
Big?
You're kind of there as the Commodore person. So what are you trying to do on kind of Twitter and the other platforms?
I'm not really trying to do anything. I only use it to get hit. Hey guys, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing something interesting. Well, I think it's interesting. If you're interesting, follow me. If not, don't. There's no big end goal for me. I just want to put something out there that hopefully people enjoy. Sometimes I say stupid stuff. But yeah, there's definitely no end game for me. There's no big deal. It's just if people want to follow me and like what I do, then that's great. Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Lots of people have a place they want to go with Twitter. I really don't. I really enjoy tweeting. I really enjoy doing that and just, you know, posting the threads. I find the threads that people do when they're fixing stuff, I find that really intriguing and good to watch. So it's that sort of stuff I'd like to do. I like to do more of if possible.
And where can people find you online?
You can find me online at Twitter, exclusively at Twitter. Just look for @Commodore.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.